The podcast you are about to listen to contains at least one of the following: strong language, disturbing topics, abusive opinions, generally things that aren't appropriate for little kids or overly sensitive people. So, if any of that stuff's going to get your nose out of joint, this is your chance to turn it off. Welcome to I Had to Say It, the podcast where I talk about things that I feel need talking about, and sometimes they're not getting the attention they deserve. And your feelings, they're not under consideration. Hey everybody, welcome to the next episode in the Aaron Has Conversations with Actual People series. In this episode, I will be talking with Josh from the Apple Boys podcast. Apple Boys is a show that I listen to every week. I really recommend, if you're looking for a show that's just, you know, a bunch of buddies sitting down talking like they would if they were hanging out at the bar after work one night. It's entertaining. It's fun. It's a good way to feel like you're sitting in there being kind of a fly on the wall while these guys are hanging out. Now, I kind of screwed up in the very beginning of the conversation, got clipped off, so I recorded this introduction real quick instead. I hope you guys enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed recording it.
See, I like doing my show, but I don't, I mean,
like for it to not cost me a ton of,
I'd like for it to not be in a real investment and still until I, you know, at least start doing some actual numbers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all well and good and it's a lot of fun. And I particularly like doing things like this where I bring somebody else on. So I have somebody to talk to instead of just kind of talking to myself for, you know, however long I sit here until before I go back and clean it all up. I mean, I try to keep the episodes, you know, usually around a half hour, 45 minutes. Just seems like a good length. But sometimes I'm in here for like 3 hours, you know.
Right.
Because I'm not, there's rambling, there's rephrasing things, there's me tripping over my own words. And
yeah, there are pros and cons, I think, to doing it on your own, because when you have those situations where you're tripping over your own words and you're rambling and things like that, you can go back and kind of make it whatever you want it to be. But then you run into the situation where you're feeling this pressure to be perfect, like for whatever you mean it to be. And I never had any desire to have a podcast. And then me and my friend started one, and I think that we have kind of a natural chemistry where when we're together in person, we talk naturally with one another. Conversation flows naturally, and some of that chemistry kind of comes through with the show. And once we had our podcast and I kind of figured out how to edit it and how to publish it and things like that, I had this idea that I have other things that I'd like to say that don't really fit within the format of our show. So maybe I'd like to do something on my own in addition to our show, right? Like not instead of the Apple Boys, but just something for myself by myself.
Just kind of like adjacent to it, maybe.
Yeah. And like
the Josh show.
Something like that. I read a lot of self-help is maybe not the right word, but like self-improvement type books. I read a ton of books. And I think it would be neat to have a book club. And I don't know that a podcast is the right format for it. I think almost a live stream where somebody, like people can come on and comment about like what they thought of the chapter or whatever. And then we talk about it live, you know, and I can call guests up to the stage and things like that. I thought that would be really neat. And I started playing around with it. And
that's actually a pretty cool idea.
I think it would be neat, but when I started playing around by myself, I realized very quickly that it's 10 times harder to do it by yourself than when you have someone else to fill that empty space and things like that. So we record for a lot longer than we publish the actual show, but our shows still run long. You know, we're still hour and a half probably as an average length. Some are a lot shorter, some are a little bit longer, but hour and a half is an average length of the show, but that comes out of often 3 hours worth of recorded content. And I posted the sort of unedited version of our anniversary episode on Patreon for from the Applebee's experience. And the unedited version is pretty close to what a normal show looks like for us. So you got the whole raw thing, and then it gets cut down to what ends up in the public.
Yeah, actually, that was the version I listened to, too. I listened to that, like, for half my day at work.
I apologize.
Oh, no, it was fun. It was almost as good as being somewhere with friends.
I mean, that's
I say almost because I was at work, so I couldn't, like, have a beer with you or anything.
Sure. One day. We can only hope.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of these years, I'll get something set up after my Powerball investment pays out.
One of these days, one of us is bound to win it, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, statistically, somebody's got to.
Yeah.
I don't know. Actually, I don't usually play the lottery anymore. The way I play is, like, I make my weekly phone call, like, hey, Mom, do I got to go to work next week? Yeah? Shit. Okay. And that's how I play. She buys tickets every week. She's methodical about it.
You know, the problem I have with the lottery is that I play when it gets high enough. And when I say high enough, like, obviously $1 million would change my life, and $100 million would obviously change my life as well. But I usually don't play until it gets close to $1 billion.
Yeah.
And then when it gets close to $1 billion, I play, and I don't play a lot, but I'll put $20 into it or something.
Yeah.
Every time it rolls over.
The only problem with that is the odds are so much more astronomical when it gets to that level, because everybody's throwing in on it.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing is, I don't check the numbers. I know you should, but I look and see did somebody win the Powerball? Did somebody win the Powerball in Tennessee? And I assume I'm just going to see it on Facebook that, like, hey, someone won in Tennessee, East Tennessee, and nobody's claimed it yet. And I'm like, oh, I need to check my tickets.
That's how I found out that the guy won $1 billion here in Illinois.
Yeah.
I had hope for like 30 seconds, because somebody I worked with was like, hey, did you buy a lottery ticket? Because the winner's in Illinois. And I was like, no. And they're like, Chicago suburb. And I was like, no. And then I looked at where the winning ticket was sold, and I went, fuck.
Yeah.
Because
been to that gas station.
I haven't been to that town in like 10 years. Yeah. I'm like, ah, bastard. I mean, it's close enough. I could have actually stopped there on the way home and gotten a ticket there, but I didn't. I got
the
ticket up the street from my house. So I'm like, son of a bitch. Because my logic was, if I won and the store that sells the winning ticket gets like a 1% of the total lottery winnings or whatever. So I was like, you know, I bought it at the little local liquor store up the street from my house. So if I won, the little guy that owns the liquor store up the street would, you know, get $1 million or whatever it turned out to be. And
he'd let you know.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure he would. He'd be like, "Hey, my friend, how are you doing? You're fresh moonshine. I got scotch." I'd be like, "Yeah, that's right, buddy.
Yeah, you get free drinks for the rest of your life."
Yeah, no, actually, I wouldn't need it though, because I would disappear so far out of this place.
Oh yeah, me too.
I would be somewhere. I actually found a great place online. It's like 174 acres or something like that in the middle of nowhere. And there's like the starts of a little compound, like right in the middle of the property. And it was like going to be a resort kind of deal. And it's like, they like, there's foundations and plumbing and, you know, wiring and stuff, but that's about it. So it would be able to build just whatever the hell I wanted there. And I was like, yeah, 170 acres and the property's right dead set them. That gives me a really lot of space where I don't have any neighbors. I like that. Because, I mean, I don't have anything against people. I'm just selective about who I actually want to talk to.
Agreed.
And I would be that guy, too, where I'd be like, hey, well, I'll tell you what, if you want to, you know, come live in the compound, it's not a cult or anything, but, you know, you do have to either bring enough resources with you to put up your own place, or bring an RV or something, because all the built houses is spoken for.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, it'd be fun. Big communal kitchen where everybody could go and eat whenever they wanted to. Plus, honestly, if I did get my hands on like $1 billion, well, or, you know, 400 million or whatever it was after taxes, after the government said, hey, yeah, I'll take 700 million of that. Bastards.
But, that seems super fair, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No, really, really, totally, completely appropriate. Pay taxes on the money you spent to buy the ticket. You pay taxes on the money you won with the ticket. And pay extra taxes for taking it all in one lump sum because you don't trust that they're still going to be there in 20 years. But yeah, I was like, I would probably put up several houses. I'd have to have a place for my parents, my wife's parents, my kids, and then like I'm sure I would have random family members showing up, like, "Hey, cuz, remember me? I'm here to come live in your compound." Like, no, you're not, Jethro. Keep on rolling, because that's one thing I figured out. I am that bastard. I'm the one that will have no problem going, "Nope, move around. I don't want you living anywhere near me." We didn't win the lottery. I won the lottery. You need to get back on the other side of the ditch.
Yeah. Same. I would have no problem telling people no. And I think that maybe my wife is a little bit different on that. So there may be some conflict there because she's a bleeding heart.
Yeah, you just got to strike the right balance.
Yeah. So her parents and my parents would have a place and probably like the most immediate family. So my brothers and her brothers probably and their families. But
I would take care of my siblings.
Yeah. Anything past the siblings of me and my wife, you're on your own.
Like, hey, good luck. Dude, do you really need $400 million? Yes. Yes, I do.
I've got big plans with it.
Like, I'm going completely off the grid, and I'm buying a tank.
Several tanks.
I don't need anything that's just for shits and gigs.
This day is always a big lottery dream day for me because I started playing fantasy football like when it was pen and paper out of a newspaper in 1997. I was in my dad's fantasy football league with some work buddies when I was 11 years old, and we just celebrated our 25th anniversary of the same league, and 8 of the original 10 members are still in the league.
That's so
we've been in the same continuous league for 25 years, and so I've been playing fantasy football since before I could, like, before I was old enough to, like, before daily fantasy existed, before sports betting was really a thing that I knew anything about. And when I discovered DraftKings and FanDuel, I started playing that, you know, pretty early, as soon as that stuff was available. And so the first day of NFL season is always ripe with a lot of that I'm going to win the big $1 million tournament. And so
this is my year.
Yeah. So every year on the first day of NFL season, Sunday morning tradition is, you know, I get up in the morning and I take a shower. And it's one of those showers where I'm sure anybody who's dreamed of winning the lottery or doing anything where they get a significant windfall has just kind of daydreamed about what you're going to spend that money on. Right. So it's going to make my life easier in these ways and these ways. I'm going to pay off these things. I'm going to buy these things. I'm going to do this stuff. And obviously $1 million is a lot different than $1 billion. The M is very different from the B, but the idea of the freedom to potentially not be a slave to the job, you know, where like, your family's become accustomed to a certain standard of living and you make a certain amount of money, and whether you like what's happening at work or not, you are bound to it, you know, unless you want to give up whatever your standard of living is, or unless you have another option lined up. And for me, you know, we talked briefly about the college stuff, you know, for me.
Yeah.
Another option is I can't start over unless I want to start over from a financial standpoint, too, right? I don't have the option to go back and just pick a different job unless I also want to go back and start at the beginning of the salary range. And I, you know, that's just not an option based on our standard of living.
Yeah, it makes things a little more complicated. That's for sure. I'm in a very similar boat myself, although I have to actually start. It's one on my agenda of things. I got to start doing some online courses and stuff for additional certifications. broaden my versatility and utility within my current position so I can ask for more money.
Yep.
Which, you know, that's fair, I think. I mean, and they said they would pay for the training if I actually passed the courses. I'm like, well, you know what? You guys don't want to front me the courses? Like, I promise I'll pass. And they're like, yeah, no. Pass the class, bring in your certification, we'll cut you a check.
Yeah.
Like, all right, that's fair, I guess.
That's better than nothing.
No, yeah, no, that definitely beats a poke in the eye with a sharp stick, I'll tell you that. But, yeah, I'm kind of in the same position. It's like, I, particularly with the fact that I worked up from grunt work in culinary, where, I mean, that's really starting close to the bottom. That's one of those things they don't tell you about when, like, I don't know if you remember, this might not have been nearly as big a deal for other people as it was in my memory. Several years back, like, they had a bunch of those different colleges were advertising culinary arts degrees on TV, like, stupid amounts, at least around here. Like, hey, come here. You can be a pastry chef. You can be a sous chef. You can be an executive chef. With degrees from our school, you can get this job, that job, this job, that job. And what they don't tell you, what they weren't telling anybody was, yeah, you can get that job with that degree, but that degree is not a guarantee you're going to get that job. And 99% of the places you go to apply aren't going to give a shit up that you have that piece of paper. They yep. want you to have experience and skill. And if you don't have it, you're starting at the bottom and you're scrubbing potatoes. And even if you do have it, you're probably still going to start at the bottom and scrub potatoes until you can prove to your boss you're not talking out your ass. It's just the industry I work in. So, bunch of these colleges like... wound up getting sued by former students because they were all like, your ad said I could get all these jobs and I've applied at 100 places and not a single one of them offered me a position that was worthy of my degree and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, how do you like them apples? So,
yeah, when I was, when I met my wife before we were engaged, we decided we wanted to pay for our wedding and our honeymoon without taking on any additional debt. So we wanted to pay for everything with cash. We didn't want to start our relationship in a hole. So I was working at the time, Monday through Friday ish, like from, it was actually more like Tuesday through Saturday. But it was from like 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. or 4:30 p.m. most days. And it was the first time in my career that I'd had sort of a set schedule. Because when you work in retail, you work a lot of nights, a lot of weekends. And it's not really set. It's very much like the restaurant business. But in the position I was holding at the time, I had a pretty steady schedule. So I had never worked in the restaurant business before, but I wanted to make some extra money. So I decided to take on an extra job as a server. And I really wanted to be a bartender because I was in a sales position and I thought that, you know, if you can sell anything, you know, being a bartender is as much about talking to people and developing relationships as it is about pouring the drinks. But you need to be able to pour the drinks, right?
Yeah.
And so
it does help.
At the time, we had these radio shows that would come on our local radio stations, and they would advertise this bartending school. It's they had this catchy jingle about 1-800-BARTEND or something like that, and they teach you all the drinks, and you get a certificate or whatever. So I thought, you know, that's like a 30-day course. It's something that I've never done this before, so that'll give me a head start. I'll go ahead and do that before I get into this industry, and I did that. And when I went to start applying for jobs, I found out that people who are in the business consider people who went to the bartending school like noobs. You know, like if you did that, then you've truly got no idea what you're doing and you definitely don't need to have a job here. You need to be baptized by fire. So if you haven't been brought up through the ranks and trained, then, you know, you have no business being here. So I ended up just starting kind of as a regular server. I did that for about a year and a half. And I was working, you know, 8 to 4, 8 to 4:30 in my normal job, then 5 to 1 or 2 a.m. in my second job. Did that for probably close to 18 months and enough time to pay for everything we needed to pay for. And I got decently good at it and you know, a lot of the skills that I had in selling electronics and things like that translated directly into selling bottles of wine and high-end glasses, high-end dishes, things like that, and attaching desserts to, you know, to meals and things like that, and just whatever you could do to increase the ticket price to also increase your tip.
Yep. Upsell.
Yeah, definitely. I learned very early on that, you know, it's about the ticket price, not the item price. And so I am better off selling a bottle of wine versus a glass of wine, even if the bottle of wine is not as high end or whatever. But the other thing that I learned is that people who work in the restaurant business are a different breed of people. Like, they're...
Yeah.
Retail's one thing, and I've worked a bunch of different jobs and things like that, but like, I've never been in a position other than in the restaurant world where when you're back of house and you're on the shift, like, people are clocked in, you've got people that are just saying the meanest possible things to one another. They're saying things that are unforgivable to each other, and you think these people are literally on the verge of killing each other. And then fast forward 4 hours later, when the shift is over and they're down the street at whatever bar is still open and having drinks together and shooting the shit because like the shift is over and all is forgiven, you know, it's just the heat of the moment or whatever. And, but I mean, they say some unforgivable shit to one another.
No, there is no doubt that is the truth. you have to have a certain, not only a certain personality, but a certain degree of just thick skinned and,
sure,
lack of fucks to give to yep, be in the back of the house.
Yeah. And it's weird how quickly, like, once you pass through that swinging door, how everything changes, like when you go from front of house to back of house. Because when you're in front of house, everybody's super professional, but the moment that door swings behind you in back of house, it's like, you motherfucker.
Oh yeah, that's that. Yeah, that tracks. I'm gonna ask, you ever see Waiting?
I have, yeah.
And yeah, that movie was so on point. I was like, yep, that's right. That's completely right. I mean, now granted, I've never like pulled my nuts out at work, but I could totally see that happening.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And actually, the part where they had the two bussers that huffed all the whipped cream, I actually had that story happen to me before that movie came out.
Oh, yeah.
The very first place I was the head chef at, we had like a Friday night dinner rush was just picking up. And the place I was working at the time, we were one of the busiest restaurants in the area. Plus where we were zoned as a bar. We had a later closing time than every other bar in the area because of our zoning. So our liquor license let us stay open till 3 a.m. and we would, you know, do like little bar food and shit after the regular kitchen hours closed. So I did keep one guy on until like midnight to do snacks. But from like 4 o'clock until about 10:30, we were just slammed nonstop. Friday, Saturdays, Sundays, we had, you know, football games on and stuff, and wing buffets and taco bars and all this other shit. Place was always packed. Did ridiculous amounts of business for a small local place, you know. And start of a dinner shift on a Friday night, and I had this new guy that had been there for a couple of weeks. I hadn't quite made up my mind about him yet, and I happened to run into him as I was going towards the back to go grab some stuff out of the walk-in, and he's like, "Oh, hey, chef, I'm going to go grab a smoke." And I'm like, "All right, well, hurry up. The rush is going to start in about 10 minutes. So, you know, do it quick. Get your ass back on the line." And I went in there and grabbed a can of whipped cream because I was going to go dress some desserts. And it was like, flat. And I pick up another one. I'm like, "I just got this case in. What the shit?" And I don't know how he got the lids off without messing with the tamper seals. But he did, and he recapped all of them. And the guy huffed the entire case of whipped cream, and when he told me he was going out for a cigarette, he must have gone straight out to his car and left. Because he was gone, and he never came back.
That's awesome.
I was mad as hell. And I wound up having to cover his spot on the line for the entire dinner rush, too. So. Actually, I did use executive chef privilege and shoved everybody else to different stations. I was like, all right,
sure.
I'm not doing salads tonight. You're doing salads.
Right.
I'm gonna do fries and flat top. You're doing salads.
Yeah. Both of my wife.
Saute guys, like, you don't want to do saute? I'm like, no, I don't want to do saute. I have you on saute tonight because you have to get better at it.
Right. Yeah, you got to earn the right to be above saute. Both of my wife's brothers have been in food for forever. They're both older than her. One's my age, one's like 10 years older than me. And
so my age.
they've been in kitchens, and she grew up in one of the most notoriously rough, like low income type counties in the state. Really high crime rate, meth, and all that stuff. And so, like, they came up without a lot of money and things like that. And so it's interesting to hear her tell the stories of her brothers in the restaurant business, because their stories were a little different than mine. And it's not really that the business itself was different, but just the way I had the job, right? So I had a primary source of income, and this restaurant thing was secondary for me. And so if it ever became too much or too off the rails or whatever, I could walk away and do something different if I wanted to. This was supplementary income for me, but for somebody who it's the primary business, you just do what you've got to do. And her oldest brother, I guess one day got a samurai sword, and he took it to the restaurant to like show all of his buddies. And at the time he was working his way up the line, and he was not executive chef, but he was like working toward becoming a real chef or whatever. And so he brought this samurai sword to the restaurant, and during a slow time of the night, they're out in the alleyway behind the restaurant, like practicing with the sword and seeing how sharp it is. And they've sharpened it with all their tools and everything, and they're cutting random shit and stuff like that. And anyway, whatever the main vein is in your leg, that's like the trunk line up. It's not like it's obviously not your jugular vein, but
femoral artery.
Yeah, the femoral artery. Yeah, so he ends up like cutting his femoral artery in the alleyway behind the restaurant, and he's trying to finish his shift while he's literally about to bleed out and ends up like passing out in the back of the restaurant. They rush him to the hospital. He barely survives. And when he like comes to, he's concerned about like, who got my fucking sword? You know, it's not like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that, or like anything like that. It's like, who got
my sword?
Where's my sword? Yeah.
That tracks.
Yeah.
Like I said, that completely tracks. And the whole finishing out the shift thing is just, I wound up with like second and third degree burns one day, and I still finished out the shift.
Yeah.
And that was a fun one. I got deep fried.
Oh
yeah. It hurt really bad. And then, being the jackass that I am, I slapped on some burn cream out of the first aid kit, wrapped it up, and then went back to work.
That's awful.
Yeah. Well, I was new at the place, and I wanted to make a good first impression. It was like my first weekend working there, too. It was such a mess. And the whole thing was, I got one of, basically, the guy that was in opening in the morning was supposed to clean out the fryers, because we did a big Friday fish fry every Friday at this place. And The morning guy didn't do it, but he also didn't bother to like turn the fryer off before he left or anything. So it had been at like 350 degrees all friggin' day. And I come walking in the door, and the chef's like, hey, you know how to clean a fryer? And I said, yeah, which one? And he's like, you got to clean the fish fryer. It's filthy, and we got a fish fry tonight. I'm like, all right. Did you guys turn it off or anything? He's like, no, but you got to have it changed in the next 20 minutes. Motherfucker. All right. So I drain out the fryer, and I got this big kettle full of hot oil, and I'm like, can I get a hand taking this out? I'm like, we can't leave this here for the entire shift. It's right in where I got to work. And they're like, no, we're all busy. We ain't got time. Fuck you. And I'm like, all right, thanks, you fuckers. I was also like, 22 and stupid. So I get a couple of towels and I pick this 15 gallon thing of hot fryer oil up, and I go walking towards the back door to go dump it in the oil bin that's outside the back door. And I didn't notice that somebody in the kitchen that was prepping and slicing tomatoes had dropped a bunch of tomatoes on the ground.
Oh no.
They picked up all the red parts, but they left all the seeds in the pulp and shit. And I stepped in that and I slipped and my feet shot out from under me and I dumped the fryer oil all over myself. And I kind of managed to turn my body, but it still covered my entire right arm and caused like pretty significant damage. And then, I got really lucky though, because one of the bar backs was also one of the bouncers after the place switched over to bar mode. Great big walking slab of beef happened to just be coming in right when it happened. And he saw it happen and he went into reflex mode. He picked me up by the front of my shirt and threw me into the sink where we had an ice bath set up because we were making soup for the weekend. And we were getting ready to shock the soup, but instead we wound up shocking the cook. The doctors said that was basically what saved my arm from getting much more severely fucked up than it was. But I also took like 3 days to get to the doctor, so I got my ass chewed 6 ways from Sunday by the doctor and by 2 of the nurses. And then by my mother, because they snitched on me. And I'm like, I'm 22. You can't call my mother. That's your emergency contact. We're calling your mother. Motherfucker. Yeah. So, yeah, I got a line of severe ass chewings. Like, my whole right arm was like a blister for 6 months. It was
disgusting. Yeah.
But it did wind up healing. So, it was like, go Aaron, I guess.
Have you ever worked front of house? Like, out?
I have, not for a very long time, but I was a server for a while. I was a bartender. Actually had a fun kind of combination deal at one place where I worked, where it was a bar and grill kind of place, but the grill and the steam table were actually behind the bar. Mm-hmm. So, that's when I lived up in Wisconsin, very Wisconsin thing, you know, have a tavern, little steam table your liquor. And so I was working the grill and the steam table where all the drunks could watch me work. It wasn't quite a hibachi situation because my back was to them when I was cooking, but I definitely had to have my like A game on as far as personality and behavior went, because they were sitting right there and they all wanted to talk to me while I was working.
Oh yeah.
You know, I get guys cracking jokes and they get like the dirty old drunks that have been at the bar since like it opened at 10 a.m. and it's now 7:30 in the evening. And they've been sipping the same glass of whiskey for the last hour and a half, grumbling and making inappropriate comments about the waitresses, and then expecting me to laugh about it. Like, I'm like, no, I got to work with this girl. You're a customer. Yeah. You say whatever you want. Nope.
You shut up.
Like, I don't need that visit to HR. I'm like, yeah, there's no HR here. It's a little mom and pop bar and grill. Yeah, no, it's an expression. I don't actually mean a actual HR department. I mean, I don't need to get my ass chewed for laughing at your joke about her tits.
Yeah. The last day I worked as a server, I did I guess I had a protein plate before we started. And it was like one of every single protein that we had on the menu. So I had, you know, it was not a high end restaurant, but it was a like moderately high end restaurant. So we had duck and lamb and scallops and salmon and chicken and beef and just everything. And it was nothing but protein. There was no vegetable. There was no fruit or anything. It was just the meat. And prior to that night, I didn't know, like, I'd heard the term meat sweats, but I just kind of thought that was like a hyperbolic type thing. I didn't know it was a real thing.
Didn't know you could actually get the meat sweats.
No, but you certainly can get the meat sweats. And so I had that before my shift started on my last day at work. And within like 40 minutes or so of me taking on tables, I got to a point where I'm standing at a table, like taking their order, and I have to excuse myself. Because I got to run to the restroom and like just shit my brains out. Oh, sorry, hit my mic. But I got to run to the restroom and just like it was awful. And the whole night, yeah, I have like sweat pouring out of every pore of my body. I feel like I'm feverish and I'm gonna die. It was awful. It was delicious. The food was really good. I really enjoyed it, but it was.
It came not with recommended. A price.
Not recommended.
That's honestly when in my restaurant days, like my problem was more like all the booze coming out of my pores during the start of my shift, because that's one thing. Restaurant people like to have their fun and relax. I think it offsets the whole, you know, like you said, being ready to cut each other halfway through the shift, and then you got to go decompress and do a couple shots and hug it out. You know, depending on your particular bent, you know, smoke a half a joint behind the building. I don't know. I was pretty much just a drunk.
Yeah,
it was a lot less adventurous with all the other stuff. But I was like,
go ahead.
I was going to say, on the other hand, I also did like bong like an entire bottle of vodka at a party one time. So, I mean, it's not like I wasn't making poor decisions. They were just different poor decisions.
I'm exactly in the same boat. You know, it was, I would work from 8 to 4:30, go to the restaurant, work till 1 a.m., go to the bar after that and drink for 2 hours till the bar shuts down, go home and get up at 8 a.m. and do it again the next day. But before that, you know, it was always alcohol for me. It was never weed or any other drugs or anything like that. But I remember being at parties and having a shot of like, or having like 10 shots of Captain Morgan lined up and just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, just right in a row as like a party trick. You know, that's like, hey, this is a cool thing that Josh can do. And, you know, I was good at keg stands, so I would do that kind of stuff. And just like you said, it's not that you're not making poor decisions, you're just making different poor decisions.
So, yeah, I didn't get to do a lot of keg stands back in the day. Kind of hurt my feelings. I mean, I've always been a big dude. I'm all squishy, but even back then I was like heavy and solid. So if I would do a keg stand, I usually waited till the keg was about 2/3 gone, and then I would just pick the keg up and hold it up over my head while somebody pumped it. Right. And it was always good for, you know, a laugh and to get a few people that didn't see it coming, like, oh my God, what the fuck's he doing? But it was, that was so dumb. All it would have taken is, I mean, the, you know, cold, wet handles on the keg, all it would have taken is one misstep and I would have dropped that thing right in my own face.
Right.
So it was not smart, but it was funny.
Yep.
Actually, that pretty much sums up me up until the age of about 27. Was that wasn't smart, but it was funny.
Same. I was I was small coming out of high school. You know, I was 6'2", 175 when I started at my current job, and took I don't know, 7 to 10 years, and I was over 300 pounds. And, it was all like drinking weight, you know, drinking and fast food. It's all
beer weight. It'll all get you.
Yeah.
Crazy. I came out of high school. I mean, I'm a little shorter, only 5'11", 6 foot, depending on which convenience store I'm in. But I came out of high school 270 something. By the time I hit 21, I was 290, 295. But I was also like, I was wearing a size 34 jeans. I was not a big dude. And I was, but I was not like heavy. That's wrong too. I was heavy, but wasn't fat.
Right.
I was more like built like a walking brick shit house, as my dad used to say. Like, Jesus Christ, how big are your shoulders going to get? And I'm like, I don't know. And
as big as they get.
Yeah. I am one of those people. I can literally fill up a door jam because I'm like 34 inches across my shoulders.
Right.
I'm like, here we go. And I got fat, and now I can actually, if I don't angle a little bit, I could get stuck in the door. So it sounds funnier than it actually is. It's kind of embarrassing. My wife and I were looking at a house, and we were walking around, and for some reason, all the doors were like 34-inch doors. And I was like literally clipping my shoulder on every freaking door jam in this place. I was like, what is going on? What is the deal with this place? And the realtor was just like, yeah, I normally I wouldn't say this, but I don't think this is the right house for you. No shit. I'm getting fat, too. So if I turn sideways, I'm still going to hit the door.
That's crazy. I guess that happens with older houses before they standardize a lot of that stuff. But
yeah, no, and that's what it is too. It's like houses built before like the 50s or 60s. Doorways are taller and narrower. It's like, what are you building for fucking Slenderman or something? I've seen pictures of people from back then. They were small. They didn't need tall doors.
That kind of stuff makes it difficult for me to enjoy. I kind of stopped going to live music as much, and I don't love to fly unless I'm paying up to fly on a, like, maybe not first class, but like business class. Yeah. Because like a lot of these smaller planes were built like a long time ago when the normal American was much smaller than they are today. And same thing with these venues that these concerts are in, and you go to sit down and it's embarrassing for one, it's frustrating for another, and it's uncomfortable for another to just not be able to comfortably sit. And when you're doing it for a long time, like on a flight or at a concert, it's, you know, it distracts from the experience.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also with the height thing too. I mean, just barking your shins on the row of seats in front of you just sucks. I had a concert went to a couple of years ago. Honestly, can't even remember what the concert was. I didn't even enjoy myself. I was like, this sucks, because I couldn't get comfortable. I kept barking my shins on the fucking back of the seat in front of me. One of the arenas around here, and that's the other thing too. I went to a Blackhawks game a little while back last fall, and I had a great time, but the seating was kind of uncomfortable just because of how much smaller that place is built dimensional wise. And I'm actually going to a concert this week on Tuesday. Going to Eric Clapton concert.
Nice.
Yeah, it ought to be a good time. It's a work function. I love my job.
It's a good perk.
Sure. Yeah, but it's Tuesday night, Eric Clapton at one of the theaters here in Chicago, one of the arenas. But it's cool because I don't have to worry about it because they got a booth. So
nice.
So it's like we got it's one of the nicer ones too. This is a supplier event. We'll bring a bunch of the big mucky mucks from all the companies we work with. So it's a write off on top of everything else, but you know, I get to go and I get to go see Eric Clapton and Jimmy Vaughn for free. And there's going to be like people bringing us drinks and stuff, so I don't even have to miss any of the show.
Yeah, you don't have to slave over the food; you just get to enjoy it.
I don't have to cook, and I don't have to pay for my cocktails. This is a win-win-win.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Would you put Eric Clapton in your top five guitarists of all time?
He's definitely up there, definitely top 10. I don't know if I'd just because there are several other guys I think. I mean, he's a great guitar player. I'm not going to say he's not, but like Stevie Ray Vaughan's in my top five, Prince, sure. And Nuno Bettencourt.
What about this is a controversial pick for me anytime the guitarist conversation comes up, but I don't know that he would be in my top five, but I think he's at least in the conversation. What do you think about John Mayer?
John Mayer? Okay.
As a guitarist.
As a guitarist, John Mayer is actually extremely talented. I've seen him because I haven't really played on a regular basis in a very long time because I accidentally got my guitar stolen from me. And this is position I was in, it just wasn't on my list of things to go buy another one. Because for starters, I was broke. For seconders, I had other priorities at the time. But as somebody who kind of understands the mechanics of how you play guitar, how you make it sound decent, I have seen this guy in different videos do shit where I'm just like, holy hell, how? Right. I don't get it. I mean, I've seen him like finger picking and thumping out rhythm on the same guitar at the same time. So, and accompanying himself basically. So right. Talent wise, the guy's pretty talented. I also think he's kind of a douchebag though. So.
No, I agree. That's why I qualified it as a guitarist and not necessarily as just a general artist or as your, like someone you just want to hang out with or want.
Yeah. I mean, purely from a talent standpoint. Yeah. The guy's good. I'll give him that. But part of me still wants to like throw a shoe at him.
Yeah, so. For sure. He has a very punchable face.
Yeah. It's just something about it. If I was meeting up with him somewhere, I'd be like, all right, tell me a Chappelle story or I'm going to hit you right in the face. So those are your options. Tell me something cool about Dave and make it a good one.
Yeah. Give me some dirt.
But like I said, talent wise, he's definitely up there. Trying to think. I don't know who'd be in your top five while I'm trying to mull this over.
Honestly,
not that I want to put you on the spot, but
no, I mean I don't have a list prepared, but I don't either. The people who popped to the front of my mind are the people you already mentioned. So, Prince, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Eric Clapton, John Mayer, like Joe Bonamassa, like those are the people who just kind of come to the front of mind. I don't know. I have an appreciation for music. I like to listen to music and I like to vibe to music and I like all different types of music. You know, I like to listen to all the different genres and things like that. But I have no rhythm whatsoever. I can't carry a tune in a bucket. I can't hear pitch. I can't hear, like, I don't have an ear for it. I just know what I like and what I don't like. You know what I mean? So
well, that's all that matters.
Right. And agreed. It, for me to be able to listen and enjoy, that is all that matters. But I feel unqualified to be a critic because I don't, you know, I'm not in a position to judge. But those four, I think, are the first four that come to mind for me, for sure. It's always Prince, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Eric Clapton, John Mayer, everybody after that is, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I can co-sign that sentiment. Personally, I'm very opposed to the idea of gatekeeping things. So I'm not gonna be like, you're not qualified to talk about this. If you want to enjoy something, you should be able to enjoy it. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I get annoyed when people are like, I mean, with the whole Stranger Things Metallica thing, all of a sudden, all these, you know, young people are finding out about this band that's been around since I was young people. And they're right. Like, you know, then you got these grumpy old cocksuckers that are out there like, oh yeah, you're not a real fan. Motherfucker. No, they're not, because they're young enough to be your kid if you weren't a basement dwelling incel. So
right. Let
them be introduced to the thing. Let them find the thing. Share the joy. Let them be happy. Don't be a dickbag because you saw some kid wearing a Metallica t-shirt and ask him, you know, what the best song that Dave Mustaine wrote while he was in the band. Tool bag.
Agreed. I think a general, one of the things that has drawn me most to your show, and one of the things that I think I don't want to speak for you, but one of the things that I think I align most with you on is I hate extremism on either end of the spectrum. Right. I hate the extremism of the gatekeeping where it's like you weren't here to experience this when it first came out. Therefore, you shouldn't be allowed to enjoy it. But I also the extremism of the cancel culture of, you know, like this shouldn't exist because it doesn't align with my beliefs and the things that I like. So because I don't agree with it, no one else should be able to experience it either. And one of the things that I've kind of heard as a common thread through all the different things that you have your things to say about are, you know, an extremism on any opinion is dangerous, right? Because it doesn't allow for multiple perspectives, multiple points of view, multiple ways to view any particular situation. And it's dangerous to live in an echo chamber. It's dangerous to live in an area where there's not room for people to have different perspectives and different points of view. And it doesn't mean that you have to agree with somebody on every single little thing. Like, variety is the spice of life. You know, it's the idea that everybody can be their own unique individual is what makes the world go round. And so it does more harm than good for people who are Metallica fans to say you shouldn't be allowed to enjoy this because you weren't around when it first came out, so you're not a true fan. Like, you're not a real fan because you didn't hear it when it first came out. No shit, Sherlock. I was not born yet, right? Like, how else would you like for me to be exposed to it other than through something pop culture that's bringing old art to the forefront of culture? Like, the fact that Kate Bush's Running Up That Hill is a number one charting song 40 or 50 years after it came, I don't remember. It came out in the 70s, right? I don't know. It came out a long time ago. 70s, 80s.
Late 70s, early 80s. Like, I was very young.
Yeah. So, like, the fact that that's a number one Spotify charting hit so many years after, good for Kate Bush. Good for the world getting to hear that song. And, you know, it's so funny. I hate to admit this in a public forum where other people are going to know about it.
Oh, there's going to be like 12 people that hear it. Don't worry about it.
All right. Well, to those of you who hear this, sometimes I like to turn things on in the background, like TV shows or movies or something that I've seen before that I don't really have to pay much attention to, but it's just something to do while I'm doing something else. And for whatever reason, I have no idea what caused me to do this, but I turned on the show The Vampire Diaries, which is like a CW rom-com TV show. It's like Days of Our Lives Vampire Edition. It's awful. And I watched it when I was dating a girl in college, like 20 years ago. I don't know. It was a long time ago. But the third or fourth episode of that show, there's a cover of Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush. And I've seen the show before. I never recognized the song, but because it was brought to such popularity with Stranger Things, and because it was charting and it was playing so much on everything that you hear, like, as soon as I heard it, I was like, holy shit. You know, Kate Bush's song was also covered in The Vampire Diaries. So,
yeah, and now it's back in the collective consciousness, so it's easier to pick out. Yep, and you don't need to feel any shame about The Vampire Diaries thing, because my wife loved that show, so I have seen literally the entire thing, and the legacies, and all the spinoffs, all of them. The originals, legacies, or whatever the hell it is. All of them. I've seen them all. I can name characters. I'm not ashamed.
I'm a little bit ashamed, but not entirely. You know, if I were completely ashamed, I wouldn't have said anything. But
yeah,
You know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I traded in most of my shame a few years ago, so I just kind of embraced the philosophy of fuck it. You know what? I don't have to be embarrassed. You don't like me for something I like. I don't.
I subscribe to that philosophy very much. It took me a really, really long time throughout, I guess, childhood and into adulthood to feel comfortable in my own skin. I've said this on our show before. I never had like a, I got along with everybody kind of well, but I never was like in a group. So I played football in high school, but I was dating the drum major of the band. So I was hanging out with the band people, and I was using my money from my part-time job at Kmart to buy Abercrombie and Fitch and Hollister clothes. And I had like the Justin Bieber sideways swoosh haircut and the blonde highlights and everything. But I would come to school early so that I could play Magic the Gathering before school with the nerds. And, you know, like I hung out with everybody, but the people who I was playing Magic the Gathering with really hated the fact that I had this frilly Abercrombie and Fitch jacket. And then the preppy kids that were wearing the Abercrombie and Fitch really hated that I was hanging out with the Magic the Gathering nerds before school. And the football guys that I was friends with didn't want to accept me because I was dating this band geek. And, you know, so it was like, I always felt like I want to like all these people, but I don't know like where to pledge my allegiance. And then later on in life, I just decided, you know what? I like musicals. I like Disney movies, but I also like football and fart jokes, you know? So it's like, I'm good with all of it. And if you can't accept me for that, then I don't want to fuck around with you, you know?
Exactly. So, you know, you add a few gangbangers into there, and it sounds like we're the same person. That's what they're because, although that was because they were on the football team, too. So.
Sure.
Yep. And, yeah, it was, yeah, no, I was pretty much the same way. I played football. I was in the band because we didn't have, my school didn't have a marching band, so the two didn't conflict.
Right.
Because we just did some final performances, and those didn't happen during football season, so. Yeah, I was in band. I was on the football team. I was in all nerd classes. I played Magic the Gathering at lunch. I was on the yearbook team. I was actually the graphic design editor for my high school yearbook my senior year. I like I said, I was in all like AP science classes. I was a huge geek. I was in theater. I was in some musicals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I was a huge misfit, and I was fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that's hard to believe that because I seem so normal now. You know, healthy and well adjusted. That's me.
I don't know for sure that I was fine with it at the time.
I don't think I was either. But
you know, I was never like super depressed about it, or I never felt like completely lost, but I never felt like I completely fit in. I really sometimes I just wished that I would just pick one and just stick with it, but every time I tried, I felt like I was missing too much, and I just couldn't, you know, I had to experience more of it, right? And if the sacrifice to make that happen was that, you know, I wasn't the most popular preppy kid or the leader of the Magic the Gathering club or whatever the case may be, then so be it. And I don't think I really came to terms with it until a good bit later, but it sounds like we had a pretty similar experience. I will say that none of my high school friends, other than the kids that I did the production with, thought it was funny or understood the comedy of it, but we did at a talent show, we did the full Monty Python and the Holy Grail witch scene at a talent show where she weighs the
same. She looks like a witch. That's fantastic.
And so we had a great time with that, and that was one of my fondest memories from high school. But I think in the moment I wished that I could be someone different. You know, I wished that I could pick a category and just do that. But now that I'm past it, can look at it from a 30,000 foot view, I'm glad things played out the way it did, because I wouldn't want to change who I am or how things played out. And yeah, I feel like if I had boxed myself into a category, I would have ended up compromising in so many different areas of my life where there are things that are important to me now that I would have either suppressed or like hidden from myself or whatever. And maybe they would have come out in some way later that was embarrassing, or maybe they would have just never come out, and I would have felt this sense of, I don't know. Just, like kind I said,
missing out.
You feel like you're missing something. And so I'm glad that it didn't play out that way, but in the moment I definitely had some self-doubt and some, I guess, imposter syndrome in every group that I was in. You know, every group that I was a part of, I felt like I could get along fine with these people, but I'm not really one of the guys.
kind of watching from the fringes. I totally get that. I completely understand where you're coming from, my friend. Yeah, it took me a long time to get to the stage of where I was just like, you know what? This is who I am. You can either like it or you can fuck off.
Right.
And, you know, although depending on who you ask, that may have happened earlier or later. Because, it may have also been fostered by that whole back of the house mentality, because I've been in the service industry long enough. I've definitely taken some character damage from it. I mean, I started at 14 and a half. I got a work permit, got a job, a local hospital kitchen in my hometown. And you'd think, you know, the normal assumption would be like, oh, it's a hospital, it's going to be a little more square and straight. Nope. Same bunch of fucking misfits, same issues.
All right. So tell me, did you watch any football today?
I did not. I was actually kind of caught up doing a bunch of stuff around the house, and I realized football had started, and then I was like, well, shit. And I had to go help my father with some stuff. So I basically was just getting updates on my phone.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Damn.
It's been an exciting weekend.
Yeah. It's opening weekend, and it was unfortunate, but like I said, I just sort of spaced. Had a really off week last week. They had a bunch of stuff going on at work that was like very important, so I was stressing myself out. The whole decompression thing kind of came through. I don't actually remember Saturday at all, so it's not that I did anything crazy or outlandish or anything. I sat around and played video games, but it's all just kind of a blur. So
it's nice to have those types of days every once in a while. I haven't played like video games in the way that I did when I was a kid since college. Like, I mean, it's been 15 or 20 years, but I do have an Xbox, and I occasionally buy the new version of like Madden or NBA 2K or some FIFA, whatever. And for people who play video games competitively, like I used to, this sounds crazy, but whenever I play the video games, what I like to do is set it to like the super, super beginner mode with the settings where you're going to make like every shot and you're going to catch every pass and you're going to break every tackle or whatever. Because I don't play video games anymore for the challenge of the video game, like the thrill of defeating the game. For me, it's like if I were doing this in real life, or if I were playing if I had a fantasy team that had these players on it or whatever, how would I want this to go in my favor? And how do I make that happen as easily as possible so that this is just a mindless decompression for me? And it's not something I do very often at all, but, you know, I'll just randomly get super stressed out, and then I'll put Madden on and put it on super easy settings and beat a team 142 to nothing and just feel good about it, turn it off, and not touch it again for another year. You know, you know,
giggle about it a little bit and be like, that was fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, actually, I use video games therapeutically these days. I work on my antisocial tendencies because I go on and I play something where I get to blow shit up and shoot things, and I do that for. Like, so just kind of turn my brain off and amuse myself. Plus, I didn't mean to, but I bought a PlayStation 5 last year. That makes it sound terrible. Like, I didn't mean to do it, but I did. My wife and I, particularly since she's been back to school, she likes to have streaming something in the background just for background noise while she does her homework. And we were using my PlayStation 4 to do that. The living room, which basically meant it was on like 24/7 for like, I don't know, about a year and a half between COVID and everything else going on. When I was laid off for like 9 months, So I would get up in the morning before she started doing her homework and stuff and play some video games while I was trying to find out if I got to go to work that day or not. And, you know, I had to wait for emails and stuff to find out if I was still being furloughed for the day. And so I would still get up and, like, make my coffee, start my day like I was going to go to work and then wait to see if I was or not. And so I would play video games in the morning. And then she would have it on streaming shit all day. And she called me up after I started my new job that I'm at now. And she said to me, it was like right around last Christmas, she says, something's wrong with the PlayStation. It's like turning itself off and it's making all kinds of weird noises. I think it's broke. Okay. Well, it's like 3 weeks before Christmas and it's going to be really hard to replace that. So I started looking around, doing some digging and stuff. And I wound up finding out that GameStop was getting in like a shipment of PS5s, and the cheapest PlayStation 4 I could find that was anywhere was a refurbished one that was like $350. And I was like, I can get a brand new PlayStation 5 for $500, an extra $150 for something brand new that's still under warranty. I think I'll do that. So I went to go get the PlayStation 5 instead. And I got there and I had to like stand in line and wait like an hour and a half to get my PlayStation. And I wound up buying it and I was very happy with it. But that also made me go, you know, I spent all this money. I should really probably just get back into playing video games. Just, sure. I have to justify that I just dropped like $500 on a toy for myself.
It's and crazy then, that you were able to get one like that. They were almost impossible to get for a long time.
They were hard to get. Like I said, I got very lucky. It was a case of somebody else I knew was looking for one, and they found out GameStop was getting them. And they were like, hey, you know, they're going to be getting a delivery Friday morning. And I was like, what a coincidence. I took Friday morning off anyway. I guess I'm going to be standing in front of GameStop before they open Friday morning. And because it actually happened to be the day after my company Christmas party, which was on a Thursday for whatever reason. And so I had a PTO left that I had to use by the end of the year anyway. So I was like, yeah, I'm taking the day after the Christmas party off. I don't want to have to deal with that particular set of baggage. I'm going to be hurting. I don't want to have to go to work. So I had taken the day off anyway. And so I got to go be hungover in front of GameStop instead of hungover in my house. And I actually wound up going to the GameStop that I normally go to because I live kind of out. Like if I go anywhere, it's a bit of a drive. If I want to go to any kind of store, it's a 20-minute drive. So I go to the one that I would normally go to, and I get there and I wait. Finally, somebody shows up and they're like, yeah, we didn't get our truck in. We don't have any PlayStations. And I was like, what? And he goes, we did not get a truck in. You have to go to one of the other stores. I'm like, but they're all open now. There's already lines at the other stores. This sucks. And I was all disappointed, and I was like, well, maybe I'll just go buy a smart TV or something. That'll serve the same purpose. Then you can still stream your shows. And my wife's like, well, no, you like to play video games sometimes. You should be able to play video games. You work hard. You deserve it. And I'm like, thank you, sweetheart. And so we get in the car, and I called up the other GameStop. And I'm like, yeah, did your truck come in? I'm already on my way towards you. Did your truck come in or not? Am I going to have to start calling every small little hick town around here that has a GameStop? And the girl's like, yeah, no, we got like 75 PlayStations in, but you have to buy the bundle. I'm like, I don't care what I have to buy. I'm asking if you have them. She goes, yeah. I said, well, how many people are in line right now? And she goes, ooh, I can tell you that because we're giving everybody a piece of paper and they're numbered. And if you lose your piece of paper, you lose your place in line. I'm like, okay, so what number are you on? Come on, lady, this shouldn't be this hard. And she's like, we're on number 53. I'm like, okay, so you still got 22 or whatever. I'm like, all right, I'm going to be there in about 10 minutes. Is that going to work? And she's like, oh, yeah, it should work. It doesn't look like anybody else is here right now other than these other 53 people that are waiting in line. I'm like, all right, cool. And I get there, I wind up being like 59 or something like that. And there, it was like limit one per customer. Cause my first thing was like, well, can I buy two? and like this kind of ghetto individual that was waiting in line a couple places up. He's like, yeah, I want two too. I'm gonna flip one of them bitches, get my money back. And I'm like, oh, it's not even that. I want to give my kid one for Christmas, but I'm getting mine first. So
yeah,
and they're just like, nope, limit one per. And I'm like, I called my kid up, like, dude, can you get off of work and come to GameStop? Nah, why? They got PS5s if you want one. He's like, I don't care. He's like, it'd be cool, but no, if you can't get two. He's like, if you can get two, buy one and I'll pay you for it. I'm like, if I can get two, I'd give it to you for Christmas. And he's like, oh, well, never mind. So I wind up, you know, waiting in line for like 3 hours to get my damn PlayStation, but I got it, which was cool. And I wound up picking up an Oculus at the same time for one of my coworkers, because I told him at the Christmas party, yeah, I got to go stand in line at GameStop tomorrow morning. I really got to quit drinking. I gotta stop. I don't want to be fucked up in line. It's going to suck. And I'm like, what if I oversleep and I miss the line? I wouldn't shut up about it. So he asked me to pick him up an Oculus while I was there for his kids. Yeah, no, I got you, bro. I got you. No problem. Just Venmo me the money. And he's like, well, all right. Just tell me how much it is and I'll Venmo it. Okay, I guess that means I got to buy it first. So I went up dropping like $1,500 at friggin' GameStop. And I texted him. I'm like, I really hope you're going to send me this cash today because I got bills to pay, bro. Because, I mean, he got like the fully loaded Oculus. So that was like $460 or something.
Yeah.
With all the sales tax and everything else and the extended warranties, blah, 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 blah. I was like, yeah, no. Aaron's credit card's sweating a little bit after this because the holidays are right around the corner. Better right. come through.
Have but, you used the Oculus before?
I have not. I've really been wanting to. My only concern is it'll give me motion sickness and I'll be one of those people that like falls over like a jackass while my wife's recording it. I won't see her doing it because I have the headset on.
Right.
And then, you know, I'll be YouTube famous without trying.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be funny. No, I haven't tried it either, but, I'm not sure. I think it'd probably be pretty fun. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, based on everything I've heard, it's pretty cool. It is on my list of things I want, but unfortunately, my wife keeps insisting that we adult, which is not fun. It's like, I will admit I probably should not have access to grown-up money. Like I need to be put on an allowance because otherwise I tend to do like ridiculously impulsive things. Not all the time. I'm usually pretty good, but every once in a while I'll see something like that's way too cool for me to pass it up.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times it works out in my favor because I'm also insanely cheap. So I find a lot of cool ways to get shit without paying full price for it. But every once in a while, it really bites me in the nuts. So I need her. I need that common sense coming out of her going, well, no, that's dumb. You shouldn't do that. And that was her common sense voice because they told me I could buy as many Oculuses as I wanted. There wasn't a restriction on that. So I almost bought one for myself at the same time I bought one for my buddy. And fortunately, my wife showed up because she dropped me off at the, like, you know, like I'm a 12-year-old. She dropped me off at the video game store and then went to go grocery shopping and run some errands. And then she came back and got me and I was still in line. So she was just like, you're not even in the store yet? I'm like, there's only three people ahead of me now. Because they were only letting two people in the store at a time so they could process things. So it was like,
right,
there's only two people left ahead of me. I'll be in there in like the next 10 minutes. She's like, I've been gone for 3 hours. I'm like, yeah, I know. Me and this dude over here, we've been cracking jokes, making fun of everybody that's walking by. There's a Panda Express right over here. We've been talking shit, trying to get people to bring us egg rolls. We actually did get a couple people to bring us some egg rolls because that we were making them laugh. So they brought us some egg rolls when they came back out. It was pretty cool. But, you know, I go in there. So she didn't have to wait in line with me. And, you know, a couple people are like, hey, what are you doing? You can't cut. And she's like, cut hell. I'm with him. He's going in to buy whether I go in with him or not. I just go in there to make sure he doesn't buy anything stupid. And I'm like, yeah, can you tell she's my wife? And they're just like, yeah, okay. And then we go in there and I'm like, you know, maybe I should get another Oculus too. Just, this is really cool. You could do a lot of like those virtual workouts and shit. And she's just like, you don't need a PlayStation and a VR headset. Well, I kind of do.
Kind
of. No, you don't. and then I actually called her out on our own malarkey shortly thereafter because she's like, okay, we just got to go. I got all the groceries. We got to grab a couple things from Walmart. Walmart was like right across the parking lot from where we were. And I'm like, I don't want to, I got like $1,200 worth of electronics here. I really don't want to leave them in the car. So I wound up like going to my trunk and getting out a blanket, covering up the back seat with a blanket. And I'm like, yeah, that looks much less conspicuous. So, and then I wind up like loading all the groceries out of the trunk into the back seat so I could put the stuff, like the electronics, in the trunk and close it up. And I'm like, oh, that's a little better. If anybody breaks in, at least maybe they'll just stick to stealing the groceries. And we run into Walmart to grab a couple things, and we're walking around, and Shauna goes, well, you know, the TV in the living room, you got this brand new state-of-the-art PlayStation 5. We kind of need a new TV because the one in the living room is getting a bunch of dead pixels in the one spot. And I'm like, what? The whole point behind buying this thing was so you could stream your stuff on TV while you're doing your homework. And so I can occasionally play video games. And now you're saying we need a new TV too. She's like, well, you did get that holiday bonus. And we can afford to get a nice TV. I'm like, we have a nice TV. And it was free. I don't want to give it up. Like, yeah, but there's that big white patch. And she's not wrong. There is a spot. It's not huge, but it's noticeable. Where it's just a little lighter than all the rest of the screen. And I did get the TV for free. I got it as a door prize at a company I used to work for a couple of years ago. I got it as a door prize at the Christmas party. And I was like, hey, sweet. 55-inch TV for free. All right. And my wife starts looking at bigger TVs. And I'm like, do we really? I just built floor-to-ceiling bookshelves in our living room that exactly fit the television we have, where it's snug right in between them. And it looks like it's supposed to be there. And like, we have a little, you know, fireplace mantle thing in between the bookshelves that's exactly as wide as the TV was. So, and I'd set the PlayStation on top of the fireplace, and so all the cords would run up. Cords all over the place. It was pretty well set up, and I'm like, yeah, I like the way this worked out. This is good. And then my wife starts complaining about the TV and the pixels. All right, fine. So, but then she's looking at like 75-inch TVs. I'm going, do we really need a friggin' 75-inch TV? And she's like, well, they're on sale for Christmas. And that's like my kryptonite, is on sale. Right. All right, but we're not getting that one. That's a fucking knockoff. We're going to go get a Samsung or something at least. So I wind up, and the rub of this whole situation is our car actually, we have a friggin' a Focus. It's not a big car. So we buy this TV, and we go out to the car, and I proceed to go, how are we getting this home? It don't fit. And I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at it, and I'm looking, I'm like, son of a bitch. This TV does not fit inside of our car. I'm not strapping it to the roof. That's stupid. That's how you wind up with a busted TV. And what we wound up doing was opening the hatchback, putting the seats down, unloading everything in the car, all the groceries, all the electronics, all the shit we just bought, sliding the TV in with the seats pushed all the way forward, and at like a 45-degree angle, corner to corner, so it just fit inside the car. And I couldn't close the hatchback. So then we had to shove all the food and all the electronics and all the shit under the box the TV was in, between the car seat, the seats we had laid down, and the thing. And then the hatchback is still standing wide open. And I'm going, all right, well, we're halfway there, as Bon Jovi said. Now what do we do? And she looks at me. She's like, well, we're going to have to drive home with the back open, it looks like. Can't close it. The TV's sticking out too far. Motherfucker. You got to be shitting me. This is ridiculous. So, and then I wound up going to the hardware store and buying like a big sheet of super heavy duty Visqueen plastic. Like a, you know, like the ones you see them wrapping up bodies in the movie, you know, like that heavy duty plastic tarp. Right. And like stretching it around the back of the car and strapping it in with bungee cords. I was like, this is the most ghetto shit I've ever done in my life. But then we got home. So,
yeah, I got to tell you, I've worked for an electronics company for the last 18 years, and we sell TVs, and that's an everyday thing. I've had 65-inch TVs be strapped on people's backs on a motorcycle.
Jesus.
I've had Mini Cooper convertibles with 75-inch TVs hanging up like out of the top of the convertible. I've had people put TVs on the top of their vehicle, and then like before they're out of our parking lot, it's the TV's just like in the parking lot because they didn't strap it down properly. It fell off and things like that. And so,
God, I can only imagine.
When it comes to TVs that don't fit, I guarantee you I've seen it all.
I believe you. And like I said, I was actually, we didn't get the 75-inch. We wound up getting a 70. So I was actually like that little extra bit of compromise where I was just like, we don't need the biggest goddamn TV they have in stock. And my wife was like, okay, fine, you're right. And I was like, besides, it's not going to fit in the bookshelves. And I had to buy like new mounting hardware because it's a bigger TV, blah, blah, blah. And I did the smartest thing I could have done and got one that extended out so the TV's actually in front of the bookshelves now instead of in between them. But it more or less fits. And on the upside, I don't have to wear my glasses when I play video games anymore. So
that's awesome.
That's a plus.
Well, Aaron, I appreciate you having me on. It was a pleasure getting to talk to you and getting to be on your show. You know, weeks get busy and there are so many shows that I interact with on social media and things like that. And there are a lot of shows that I listen to that I want to be able to hear every week, but sometimes there's more to do than there is time to just, you know, listen to podcasts and things like that. But your show has become a part of my regular rotation. I listen to it every single week, no matter how busy I get. So I really appreciate everything that you have to say every week. And, you know, our show, the Apple Boys podcast, is really just bar banter. You know, we get serious every once in a while, but more often than not, it's just a show that imitates, you know, if we were getting together on a Saturday night after work and just talking about how our week went and things like that over drinks. That's what our show is. So it's me and three of my friends, Corey, Rob, and Jimmy. The Apple Boys name came from, you know, there's an Applebee's near us, and we met on Saturdays, and Saturdays are for the boys. So meet at Applebee's and Saturdays for the boys. So it's the Apple Boys podcast. We're on all of the major platforms, you know, Good Pods, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you can get podcasts. And if you want to see all our links, it's at appleboys.us. And we're on social media. Our handle is at appleboyspod on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. I'm most active on Twitter. Jimmy runs our Instagram account. And then we really don't do much on Facebook and TikTok, but we're on there. So if you interact with us on there, we'll interact back. But like I said, I appreciate you bringing me on and had a great time. Thank you very much.
Cool. My pleasure. I also had a great time and thank you for, you know, making the time in your schedule to, you know, come on and talk to me. So, and I guess for now we're going to say that's what we had to say.